I will be talking with very shortly the artistic director of Sydney Theatre Company's Kip Williams. He is one of my favourite directors of all time. He directed Lord of the Flies, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, A Cheery Soul, Harp in the South, Parts 1 and 2. Oh, there's so many productions. He's directed Chimerica, and one of his first that I saw was Under Milkwood, an amazing production. He was directing associate at STC, has been since 2012, and has been the artistic director since 2016, the youngest artistic director of Sydney Theatre Company of all time. Welcome to Stages, Kip.
Hi, Regina, how are you?
Hi. So before we get into the state of play for Sydney Theatre Company, I want to find out just a little bit about you and where you're from. So where did you begin life?
I'm sort of a bit of a rare being in theatre in that I'm actually from Sydney. So much of our industry are made up of brilliant people from around the country. But yeah, I'm from Sydney. So I grew up in Sydney and then did my university studies at Sydney Uni. I studied journalism there. Oh. And then to NIDA to study directing.
That's right. So were your parents creative? Like, were they, you know, influential?
Yeah, they were. And as were their family members. So my dad's mum was an actor. Radio and then in television and film. And so she would encourage my siblings and I and my cousins to put on plays for her in her living room from a young age. So it sort of began there. And dad trained as an opera singer and mum's brother was a reasonably successful folk musician in the 60s and 70s. So there's quite a lot of music and performing in the family.
Wow, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So did you see theatre then, obviously, from a young age, and it was part of the breath of the house, the atmosphere of the world you were in?
It was, yeah. I remember, I think probably one of the first things I saw, I would have been about 3 years old, and my folks took me to Tamworth to see a musical that my uncle had written. And he played a role in it as well. And I remember that was pretty exciting and kind of a bit confusing seeing my uncle on stage. I went from quite a young age and just obsessively loved it. And then, you know, started a theatre company with my friends when I was 11, which is a bit tragic.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What kind of plays did you do? Do you remember?
Like terrible plays that we would write and devise and just horrible student theatre, you know, almost get out of your system.
Do you remember some of the things that your mom did on radio plays?
My grandmother, yeah. I don't know the specific plays she did. She won kind of the equivalent of a helpman for her radio acting, which was pretty cool. I remember seeing that in her wardrobe. But she tells this great story about doing radio plays live on the ABC, and one night one of the actors got one of their lines wrong, and instead of saying look up on the road ahead, he said look up on the road ahead, and they had to improvise the rest of the radio play as if they'd seen a head, like a decapitated throat.
That is fantastic.
I radio back in the day.
Well, that seems to make sense to me now that you've done, you took Under Milkwood and put it on the stage. Was that kind of, do you think, influenced by, you know, that history?
Massively, yeah. I mean, I took over that production from Andrew Upton with about 6 weeks to go before rehearsal started, and there was no set design or anything at that point. And I remember I had to convince Jack Thompson and Sandy Gore to let me take over the show. And one of the things that got them across the line was that my grandmother had acted in radio. Yeah. I could talk to them about how radio works. So,
That's fantastic. That is one of my all-time favorite productions of yours that I've seen directed, I must say.
Thank you. I remember we spoke about it back in 2012. I came into the studio to have a chat with you.
Yeah, it was absolutely beautiful. And you do have a very choreographic and visual way of treating the works that I've seen. But you've studied journalism, so how do you think you've got that sort of visual world? Do you think about a play in a kind of choreographic sense?
Yeah, very much so. I'm very sort of visually oriented as an artist. I mean, my other grandmother wanted one of her grandchildren to be an architect, and so she would have us paint and play with blocks and all sorts of things. So the sort of visual play was always a big part of my background as well. And the journalism I was drawn to because I was interested in storytelling. I mean, journalism is a form of storytelling and structuring of information, and I learned a lot from how to construct a narrative and what information gets preferenced in storytelling and difference between short form and long form journalism. So I found that really useful in many regards. But visually and choreographically, those were more skills that sort of came more from childhood play and developed over time.
Who are some of your sort of, inspiring or favorite directors then that were maybe influential to you as a director that you've seen over the years?
Definitely Pina Bausch. Pina Bausch is probably my number one inspiration. She's a German choreographer and
Absolutely.
director whose work, I mean, if you haven't seen it before live or on video, you can check it out on YouTube. Her work is truly extraordinary, the way that she expresses ideas in through abstract movement and image making. So her work definitely for me.
I can see that there is something actually I watched recently during this lockdown that was circulating around, and it's just stunning. This the use of symbolism through just a person on stage, it's quite powerful.
Now, if I could ever do anything that's 1% as good as Pina Bausch, I would die a happy person.
Oh, well, I think you could die happy, all. So do you think that there were people that were, influential in or instrumental in your development? I mean, obviously under Milkwood, how did that kind of come about? Like that you kind of got to step into that, but were there people that actually saw something in you and helped you along?
Yeah, I'm a big believer that luck is a huge part of or any person's life, but particularly anyone life in the performing arts. It's something that my grandmother instilled in me from an early age. She talked about needing to have work ethic and drive and creativity, but that luck would be a big component. And I was very lucky that Andrew Upton employed me straight out of drama school as his assistant director, and he gave me a huge amount of opportunity from a very early age in my career, both in working with him on his production of The White Guard when I was first out of school, and then giving me Under Milkwood to direct. And it's something that I run in Sydney Theatre Company. I keep at the forefront of my mind, trying to give the opportunities to other artists and particular directors that I was given at a young age. So, I've got this phenomenal resident director, Jessica Arthur at STC, and just wanting to find ways to give her opportunity to grow and develop in the way that I was given those opportunities when I was at a similar stage.
It's something that is to be able to see the potential, but also I don't think anyone else could have done the same with Under Milkwood or Chimerica or anything. Like, so is there something that he saw on stage in you in particular, do you think? Like, what do you think he saw there? And then what do you see in other people's? Because your, I guess, theatrical voice is unique to you.
I suppose with Andrew, he on the second week of rehearsals, the White Guard turned up one morning and said to me, "Look, I unfortunately have to go into this incredibly important crisis meeting. I need you to take rehearsals for me." And it was the first pass at staging a scene that had 14 people in it who were running in and out, and guns were being shot and bombs were going off, this big choreographic mess of a scene. And he came back 2 hours later, and I'd staged it, and he was really impressed with how I'd used the space. And then he came and saw an opera of mine later that year, an independent opera I'd done with Sydney Chamber Opera. And again, he commented on the use of space to tell story, the kind of choreographic element. And for me, that's something that I always look for in directors, the way that they use space to tell story, because ultimately the thing that separates theatre from other narrative art forms is that it takes place in space. It's a three-dimensional art form. And the way that the audience is receiving the story is always through the prism of space. So you need to be able to use space to communicate almost unconsciously with the audience how the story is unfolding. And Jess, somebody who I've watched her work, and she's a genius at knowing how to choreograph and create image and use space and orchestrate the space in order to tell story. I mean, of course, there's a huge raft of other skills that come or are required in order to direct, particularly in terms of working with actors and writers and language and whatnot. But at its core, it's a spatial art form, and it's about actors in space.
I can't help thinking about you saying that luck has plays so much of a role in it, and but then it's something that you can't control, isn't it?
Yeah. You think about the moment in time that we're in right now, where so many people in the performing arts have lost work and have lost opportunity, and you know, luck works in both positive and negative sense. Yeah. It's incredibly bad fortune that it's in this way. Obviously, it's how you deal with these circumstances, and certainly in these moments you want governments to step in and support people. But in terms of good luck, you know, yeah, it's like the cliche of the prima ballerina breaking their leg and the understudy
going. Yes.
You know, you need those moments of your big break as well. And I got very lucky with Under Milkwood that, you know, Andrew Upton was my prima ballerina that broke his leg and I got to step in. But you've got to be prepared for those moments too. You know, you need to have done the work in the background, the rehearsal and the practice, and put the hours in so that when your lucky break comes, you're ready to step in.
Yeah, and be brave enough to do it and to take the reins fully. So what would you say then to governments, if you could, about the arts, like the support that is required and not the responsibility of the arts, but the importance of it?
Well, if anything, COVID has underscored the incredible importance of the arts to our survival. You know, what has everybody done in this moment of dislocation? We have turned to the arts, to walls, to music, to narrative art forms, to nourish ourselves, to feel connected, to feel joy, to feel inspiration, to feel reassurance in this moment of dislocation and isolation. It is completely proven the vital necessity of the arts to our functioning as human beings, and yet, you know, so many members of the artistic community have been left out in the cold during this moment. I speak from a very fortunate position of having a full-time job in an arts organization, but that is a rare thing in our community, and so many people have lost work. And so many people, you know, it's been fantastic that a portion of the industry has been covered by JobKeeper, that the vast majority of our freelancers have not been covered by JobKeeper, and there should be government support for those individuals, because these are people who do work across the years and who are workers who contribute to our economy, who are workers who contribute to this vital function that the arts plays in our lives, and who deserve support. And of course, we're thrilled that the state government has just announced the $50 million support package, and that will go some ways to help support our industry. But you know, if anything, this moment has underscored just how important the arts are, and that we need to, as a society, rethink the way that we value and support our creative communities, because it's been devastating to see the impact that it's had on our industry.
Well, you're listening to Stages, and I am talking with Kip Williams, Artistic Director of Sydney Theatre Company. So what would you be doing now? What would STC be doing now had it not been for COVID-19?
Yeah, well, we would have a number of different shows on our stages. We would have the Seven Stages of Grieving opening, which would have been the directorial debut of Shari Sevens. We would have just closed Triple X by Glace Chase, had Home I'm Darling on our stages. We'd be going into rehearsals for The Picture of Dorian Gray, which I'm adapting and directing in starring Erin Jean Norval. So, you know, there's sort of this huge, there's a grief, I think, that comes with the loss of this work, you know, the potential of these incredible stories that we could have shared with audiences. But, you know, in the wake of that, there's great resilience in our industry. There's a real commitment. Certainly, my commitment at Sydney Theatre Company is to see these shows that have been cancelled realised either later this year or in next year's season. So there's hope in that. You know, audiences get to see these incredible productions and share stories.
Maybe in honour of your grandmother, a radio play version of something.
Yes, yes. Well, that is certainly something that we've been talking about.
Really? So I know that there will be a reading tomorrow, Thursday, going on. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that and how to
watch it? Yes. So exciting. So Thursday at 7:30 p.m., you can tune in and watch a live reading of No Pain, No Way by Dario Fo, adapted by the brilliant Marie Cardi. Our production of No Pain, No Way opened to a standing ovation at the Opera House.
Absolutely. I stood. Yay, it was fantastic.
It just was such a cracking production.
It's so fun.
Yeah.
Audiences were loving it, and then we had to pull it off the stages due to coronavirus. And it's the one of the things that our audience has said the most in the past few weeks is how much they wish they could have seen it for those who missed it. So this is a chance to see a very special version of it where the actors will be performing the play live from their homes over Zoom. They're in rehearsals at the moment for it, which is very exciting. And it's all part of our Sydney Theatre Company virtual platform, which has been a really key way for us to stay connected to our audience during this period of closure, but also continue to engage and employ our artists and our technicians and our stage managers to do what we can during this incredibly tough period.
Is it more than a reading? Is it actually, would that be physical?
Well, I can't give away too much, but it's essentially a reading of the play. There will be some.
Because it's very slapstick. Like there's that element of, you know, entrances and exits. So be curious to see it, actually.
It's going
to
be one of the interesting things of putting a farce into the Zoom
world.
Obviously, you can't do all of that physical slapstick comedy, but the play itself, Marieke's writing, I mean, everybody's familiar with how brilliant Marieke is, but writing in this particular play is so funny. And these performers, you know, Helen Thompson and Catherine Van Davies and Rahel Roman, Glenn Hazeldine, Aaron Sindos, they are such funny actors. So yeah, the little snippets of rehearsal I've caught a glimpse of already are having people in fits of giggles. So I think they're surprised by it.
So what does the future look like for Sydney Theatre Company in the both near and distant?
Look, we are doing everything we can to reopen our theatres as soon as is safe and viable to do so. We're obviously looking at all of the ways in which that's being approached internationally. One of the interesting cases is looking at South Korea, where their production of Phantom of the Opera has been playing in a 1,500-seat theatre all through the coronavirus period. They've had temperature checks and deep cleans, and they haven't had a single case transmitted to an audience member during that time. So there's certainly some benchmarking and case studies that we've been looking at that show very promising signs for how to manage theatres. We are returning to the Wharf next year.
Yes.
Which is exciting. So I'm putting together the 2021 season with a Wharf in play for the first time for 3 years.
Hooray.
With excitement about that.
That is very exciting.
Yeah.
So do you have a production that you're particularly either like proud of or most challenging that you had to solve?
As a director myself?
As a director, yes, yeah.
Goodness, everyone feels challenging. Yeah. Certainly the resistible rise of Arturo Uy.
Yeah.
It's a huge formal challenge because of the way that Brecht wrote that play is this almost mashup of, you know, eight different genres. And the way that we approached it was to use a raft of live video. And so it was technically so complex. That's certainly one that was hugely challenging and one that I'm very proud of. And probably the other one that I did straight after that in 2018 was The Harp in the South, Hark's novels adapted by Kate Mulvaney, because that was a seven-hour production. And just the sheer task of figuring out how to realise 7 hours of theatre and keep all those balls in the air was hugely challenging, but so wonderfully rewarding with beautiful.
Do you have something on your bucket list that you haven't kind of gotten to yet that is brewing?
You know, I do. I kind of work in a strange way where I usually start with the playwright more than the play.
Oh.
Obviously, I've got plays in my head that I love and would like to do, but I generally think about how the world is operating and think about writers whose body of work and whose philosophies and politics speak to that moment in time, and then I start looking for a play based on that. I have a couple. I don't have a long bucket list is my sort of answer, but I have a couple of players on the bucket list, but I'm also slightly superstitious.
Yes, I understand.
Don't like saying out loud things
until they're being realized. So. Yes, I understand. What do you think it is? What do you think is important as a creative? I mean, outside of these hard times, what advice would you give someone as a director that wants to pursue a career?
Do it. It's a profession that that you can only really master through practice. Watch as much theatre as you can, but also engage in other art forms that explore space. So go and watch dance and go to galleries and look at sculpture. Think about architecture, think about space, and also think about music, because rhythm is so important, both visual rhythm, how things evolve visually over time, but obviously oral rhythm. That immerse yourself in those elements of the art form, and then just whatever you can, even if it's in a garage, make theatre and get an audience along to see it, and work with actors and designers and figure out how it all comes together. So it's very much a synthesis of a number of different threads.
So is there anything that you've seen over this time that has been inspiring? I mean, it's really hard to take theatre, obviously, from the stage. Have you seen anything that's really caught you, or it could be, you know, art or dance?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been fantastic to see the streaming of productions that companies all around the world have been doing, and that's been, you know, like there's a sort of thing in theatre where if you almost kill a production by filming it.
Yeah.
But I think that some people are developing ways to do it really well, and it's been exciting to watch productions from a multiple of different cultures during this period. I don't think you can lose out from watching those and being inspired by them. You know, I've sort of kind of loved the pieces of work that have been sort of handmade during this period. I've loved watching actors performing various bits of text all around the world. Responding to this moment, and obviously in our first phase of Sydney Theatre Company Virtual, we've had a number of actors doing that for us too, and I've found this sort of the connection that has come from seeing people in their homes, in their vulnerable spaces, and identifying with that in the way that we're all experiencing it at the moment. It's been beautiful. So I've loved both the kind of the grand high scale streaming of productions, as well as the handmade moments responding to the times in which we're in.
It has made international works more accessible. And do you think that will be something that might continue in a way? Like, will you continue SDC Virtual?
In some way, yes. I hope so. And particularly the live streamed reading we're doing on Thursday night, which is also going to be available for a week afterwards on demand. But we're really going to learn so much from this moment. There are lessons we're going to learn about technology and the sort of producing model, the production model of how you create this content that we're going to be able to apply to future non-COVID productions. And I think, you know, if there's a kid in Darwin, or if there's a you know, somebody in Perth who watches the streaming on Thursday night and gets to experience the joy and the talent and the political discourse of this play who otherwise wouldn't have been able to. That's such a phenomenal thing, you know. And I think there are some people out there who are purists who say, well, it's not theatre, and I don't think anyone's pretending that it is, you know.
No.
It's unprecedented moments that we're in. This is such a unique point in time. And so we need to embrace the spirit of the moment that we're in, but also know that this isn't going to take away from the ability for audiences to come and watch theatre live. If anything, I hope that if someone out there watches this who's never been to the theatre before and loves it, I hope then that person goes and buys a live theatre ticket. And I think that they would more likely do so, you know, once Corona's over. So I think it's all good. I think it all feeds forward into celebrating the art form and what's special about it.
Absolutely. Well, Kip Williams, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Well, that was Kip Williams, the Artistic Director of Sydney Theatre Company. And you can tune in tomorrow night to see the Zoom version of No Pay, No Way by Marieke Hardy. Really, absolutely terrific production. Worth tuning in. Get onto the Sydney Theatre Company website and you can view it that way. Well, that's about all we have time for today. I'm Regina Botros. You've been listening to Stages. We have been keeping the theatres talking about what's going on. Hopefully, the future is looking brighter every week.